Good morning. You are tuned in to Community Radio, listener-supported KGNU. I'm Maeve Conran, and coming up on today's Morning Magazine, we'll check in with the Executive Director of Colorado Common Cause on election integrity and some last-minute things that you need to know if you've yet to return your ballot today. Then Motus Theatre Company in Boulder will later this week present a new production that will feature audience interaction and poetry from immigrants currently in sanctuary in the state. We'll get a report. After the comment line, we'll have headlines from the BBC and then science. And today on How on Earth, we'll hear about environmental concerns regarding backcountry skiing. We'll also hear about Paleolithic bone fires. At 9 o'clock, it is the wit and wisdom of Alan Watts rounding out this morning's news and public affairs. But first, we'll begin with the latest local headlines. The Boulder County Board of Commissioners yesterday voted to extend the county's current moratorium on new oil and gas activity until July 31st of this year. The existing moratorium was set to expire at the end of this month. At a public hearing on Monday, the commissioners heard a staff presentation and written input from the public before making their vote to extend the moratorium. According to a statement from the county, the extension gives the public more time to respond to drafts of the new regulations before they go before the Planning Commission and later the commissioners. The statement went on to say that the moratorium also allows staff and the public to turn their attention to major rule rewrites that are happening at the Colorado Oil and Gas Conservation Commission through the month of May. Amy Klobuchar cancelled a rally planned for Denver on Monday afternoon after she announced that she was withdrawing from the Democratic presidential primary. Klobuchar announced that she was now supporting Joe Biden. She's just the latest candidate to drop out ahead of Super Tuesday, which has several states, including Colorado, casting their votes today. If people have already voted for a candidate who has now dropped out of a race, they cannot cast a new vote, says Molly Fitzpatrick, who's the Boulder County Clerk and Recorder.
So once a person votes and turns in their ballot to our office and we receive it, that's it. We cannot give ballots back once they're in our office. If you have any doubts and you want to wait it out to see who stays in, hold your ballot. We do love early voters, but we also understand that things are changing very quickly right now. And the most important thing is that people vote and they feel like they have the information they need to make a great choice.
Colorado Secretary of State Jenna Griswold tweeted Monday afternoon that if voters have already marked a ballot but have not yet returned it, they can change their selection by crossing out the first pick and then marking the oval next to the preferred candidate that you wish to vote for. Or, Griswold continued, you can actually get a replacement ballot in person at a voting centre if you've yet to cast your ballot. You can find a list of voting centres or ballot drop-off locations at govotecolorado.gov. But ballots must be returned, so it's too late to mail them, or votes cast by 7 p.m. today. Colorado lawmakers have introduced a measure to increase protections for animals in shelters around the state. Henry Schuyler has more.
Senate Bill 164 sets a standard of care for animal shelters in Colorado and states that cats and dogs cannot be euthanized due to overcrowding or a lost owner. Some shelters across the state are objecting to the legislation, saying they are already meeting the standards issued by the bill. While the bill is trying to establish a no-kill or a socially conscious shelter model across the state, many feel that these standards are already being met. This model is already taking place across the state, at places like the Humane Society in Pikes Peak region in Pueblo. The shelter told The Sun that they would never euthanize due to lack of space or time, but instead transferring the animals to a different shelter within their jurisdiction. Republican lawmakers have pushed back on this legislation, claiming that overcrowding in shelters in western Colorado could be a problem due to the lack of demand. The bill that is now heading to the House would still allow for animals to be euthanized if they are deemed terminally ill, aggressive, or injured. For KGNU, I'm Henry Schuyler.
Boulder City Council this evening will hear why there have been so many delays in rolling out an online petition system. In November 2018, voters in Boulder approved a ballot initiative that authorised the City Council to adopt ordinances allowing electronic signatures to be submitted to get an initiative on the ballot. However, the process has been significantly delayed and the city still does not have online petitioning. City Council is set to discuss the measure at this evening's meeting. waiting. The delays in rolling out the system have prompted a lot of criticism from election transparency advocates, and many will be testifying at this evening's City Council meeting. Public comment will be accepted at the meeting, or people can email comments to City Council ahead of time. We'll get a report on tomorrow's Morning Magazine, and you can find our coverage on this issue online at news.kgnu.org. Aurora City Council yesterday moved along a measure that requires restaurants in the city to make a non-sugary drink, like water or milk, the default beverage on a child's meal. The Aurora Sentinel reports that City Council voted 6-3 in favour of the bill, which now goes on to a second and final reading. If the measure is passed, restaurants in Aurora would only serve sugary drinks with kids' meals on request. Non-sugary drinks would be the default offering and the only options showed as part of a child's meal bundle. Critics of the measure say it's government overreach. Councilman Dave Gruber said that it's nannyism at its worst. However, supporters of the measure, including many healthcare providers, say that it will make a big impact on thousands of children's health. If passed, Aurora would be the largest municipality in the state to impose such restrictions on sugary drinks. Other communities, like the City of Boulder, have passed measures, including increasing taxes on sugary drinks that are sold in restaurants and grocery stores. And in the weather, expect sunny skies for the week around the Front Range. Expect highs today getting into the upper 50s, and tomorrow it'll get into the low 60s, and it may even get to the mid to upper 60s by the end of the week under sunny skies. It is 13 minutes past 8 o'clock. You're listening to KGNU. Well, as we have been reporting, today is Super Tuesday and ballots must be returned by 7 p.m. this evening, so it's too late to mail them. But it's not too late to register to vote, says Amanda Gonzalez. She's the Executive Director of Colorado Common Cause.
So if voters have moved, if they forgot to update their registration, they can still go to any voter service and polling center in their county, register and vote today.
It is too late, though, however, to change party affiliation. Is that correct?
Correct.
What are some of the other things that people need to pay attention to as we are, for the first time, really, in Super Tuesday and participating in the presidential primary?
Yeah, it's exciting. I think a lot of people are going to feel like their voice is really heard. And so that's a great thing for Colorado voters and for our democracy. We're really hoping for excellent participation and turnout. As we mentioned, people can still register and vote today. If you've misplaced your ballot, if you've lost your ballot, if your dog got a hold of it, that's still okay. You can go to a voter service and polling center in your county and pick up a new ballot or vote there in person today. So, even if you're bad at keeping track of your mail, don't let that get in your way. I think the other really exciting thing is that this is the first time that 17-year-olds who will be 18 by the November election are able to participate in our primaries. And so we have a whole group of young people that hopefully we're planning to vote in November anyway, that will get to have a say on who's on that ballot.
And Colorado still has paper ballots. What does that mean in terms of safety and verification in elections?
Oh, it's so important. So I think that we have seen some of the headlines recently about apps or, trying to vote electronically. And really, paper is the bedrock of election security because you always have that record. You have a way to go back and ensure, was my vote cast and counted the way that I intended for it? Obviously, if you vote the ballot that was mailed to you, and of course it's too late to mail it back today, you would need to go drop it off at a drop box or a voter service and polling center. Or even if you vote in person, that machine is going to print out a paper ballot. So here in Colorado, we always have a way to verify that those ballots were counted accurately.
Well, Amanda, thank you very much for taking time to talk to us. Any final thoughts as we head into Super Tuesday? As we said, until 7 p.m. this evening, people have an opportunity to register, turn in their ballots or vote in person at different voting centres. Anything else that people really need to be aware of today?
just a reminder that, again, don't put that ballot in the mail. It needs to be received by your county clerk by 7 p.m. today, so it needs to go into a drop box or voter service and polling center. And if you need to find a VSPC or a drop box near you, you can visit justvotecolorado.org, and that's going to have all of your drop boxes and VSPCs, so you can make sure and get to one by 7 p.m. today.
Amanda Gonzalez is the Executive Director of Colorado Common Cause. And don't forget, we will be live streaming at kgnu.org all 5 hours of Democracy Now!'s special Super Tuesday coverage. Go to kgnu.org from 5 p.m. We'll also have a live stream of Pacifica Radio's coverage as well, featuring Sonali Kolhatkar. So you can have the option of either one. It's all online at kgnu.org. And this afternoon from 5 to 6 p.m., we'll bring you that first hour of Democracy Now! Super Tuesday coverage in place of BBC. That's on our for our radio audience. It is 8:17. You're listening to KGNU. Well, Modus Theatre Company in Boulder will later this week present a new production that will feature audience interaction and poetry from immigrants who are currently in sanctuary in the state. KGNU's Rosanna Longo has more.
Invisible Lines is Motus Theatre's new experiment in audience interactive theatre that shares the stories of immigrants in sanctuary. Rosa Sabido has been living in sanctuary.
As you mentioned, I'm in sanctuary, and I've been living in sanctuary in a Methodist church in Mancos, Colorado for 1,000 days as today. And I thank you for inviting me and to bring those issues and the important problems that we are facing or the struggles that we are going through as an immigrant, and try to bring some justice and equality for all.
Rosa Sabido has been writing poems from her site in sanctuary in Mancos, Colorado for this project. This is one of them.
Those buildings on the rooftop, like monsters, always looking at me, like taller walls of a prison without end. They are silent neighbors, witnesses of my lost eye when I look around and nothing changes. I can almost hear the tick-tock of that big clock, where the time is always the same, always the same. Always the same.
Kirsten Wilson, Motus Theatre Artistic Director, explains why it is important to pay attention to people in sanctuary.
I think sanctuary is a very, very important and a very great gift to reflect on, because sanctuary is where you go when the gap between justice and the law becomes so big that hundreds of thousands of people are falling through that crack. One of the invisible lines we have in the country is our southern border. It's not a real border. It was created actually by the actions of the Border Patrol have created the border. It was fluid for most of this country's founding, and it allowed people to come and go and work and see family. It allowed people who are indigenous to this area, much more indigenous than the Europeans that have colonized it, to return home to their family lands and ancestral lands. And one of the concerns I have around immigration is there's a lot of talk about, you're breaking the law, or there's the right or wrong way to go. And the truth is, while I want to gauge people deeply in the issue of sanctuary, is at some point in our life, everyone, either on a grand scale, like Diego, who Rosa mentioned, where if they get deported, they don't have a place of refuge, they will be sent back to their death, period, punto, done. But there's also many of us at a different time in our life needed refuge. We needed a place of safety. And so we know the importance of that. And we know that importance as a community, because in our history, our government and our democracy has improved because there have been people who have declared sanctuary when laws have been unjust, whether that's Underground Railroad or the sanctuary churches in the 1980s and 90s. We stop and say, this is not okay. I will not abide by that. And one of the things I love about each of these stories is most of the people in sanctuary and in the nation have really clear lines that they won't cross. Because if they do, it will undermine their ethics, their morality, their relationship to God, their relationship to what is right. So, for example, in the poem that Rosa read of Ded Raxenburger, he's from Albania. His wife has MS, severe MS. So he has to carry her around out of her wheelchair to go to the bathroom to take care of her. She's down to like 70 pounds. And they say, the immigration says, we, after raising two children here, we can deport you back to Albania. But we won't deport your wife because she will die, but we'll deport you. But then what will happen is that he made a promise 30 years ago when he married Flora, which is for better or for worse. And if he leaves, she will be a warden of the state. The state and all the taxpayers, you and I and the Republicans and the Democrats, will be paying hundreds of thousands of dollars to take care of this woman. When if we would just let her husband, who all he's done is work hard, pay taxes, feed us hot dogs at his restaurant for the last 20 years, if we just let him stay and be a good member of our community as he is, then he's saving everybody. And it's a gift. It's a gift to his wife. He's modeling it for his son. And there's no economic reason. And I think people think that the people being deported are some threat or some criminal element or et cetera. He came over during the Albanian Revolution, civil war. It was violence. He came over here to see family. He stayed and worked and has been an awesome citizen. And so we really have this question of he is a man that is not letting himself be deported because it would be crossing a line that is against the rule of a husband, of a father, of a man. And so when he stands there in sanctuary, he reminds us of what's important in our lives. And that's something we've forgotten at the border, because in the name of supposedly keeping the integrity of our country's borders, we're damaging, possibly irreparably, our country by hurting women and children and weakening who we are as a democracy, and having that level of complex reflection and thought, not about good, bad, the law or not the law, but what is justice and how do we stand for justice and vote so that the laws represent more of justice.
That's Kirsten Wilson of Moses Theatre speaking about their new production, Invisible Lines. To KGNU's Rosanna Longo, we also heard Rosa Sabido, who is currently in sanctuary in a church in Mancos, Colorado, and poetry that she has written will be included in the Invisible Lines production. It plays from Thursday, March 5th through Sunday, March 8th at the Derry Arts Centre in Boulder. There are different showtimes varying on the day, and each performance will feature a different story, and you can find out more online at modustheatre.org. That's modustheatre.org. It is 8:24. You're listening to Community Radio KGNU, and it is time now for the comment line.
Concerning the Trends podcast addressing diversity, inclusion, and equity on 2/20/2020, Rosanna Longo hosted a 3-person panel. Ramon caught my attention by noting what he called a touch of danger as part of a lived experience for people visited by racism. It exemplified my lived experience as well in the city and county of Denver. In fact, I am often anxious to exit my home based on the racial profiling I have experienced, because no matter what, if you are not part of the dominant race paradigm, for example, you are going to feel at risk wherever you go. But that's just my lived experience in terms of a touch of danger. By calling one entitled is unfair discrimination purely because of race, class, and gender, which, upon sight, are not always what you think it is anyway, based on an overt stereotype. further, Shaheen addressed hegemonic white spaces potentially as oppressive white towers. But I beg to differ because I wonder, how does such a theory apply to Walmart or Civic Center Park heroin encampments? Moreover, I'm not entirely sure how to interpret Yarbrough's anecdote regarding a colleague's first and initial description of Boulder's Pearl Street Mall as bright. I mean, what does that mean in a racist context from an international female's point of view? But I didn't want to challenge that at length because it's under the set consideration of host Longo's comment considering her lived experience and self as a freckle when she's on the Pearl Street Mall. I'm like, why be a freckle? Be a beauty mark. Why be the freckle when you can be the beauty mark? Noting color lines on the hill in Boulder is not just an issue for people of color. There are racial divisions in businesses all over the South Platte River Valley. Places I would never feel welcome based on my race, not to mention my own neighborhood. But to assert that surveillance makes people feel safer because of their whiteness, or to actually believe that a camera's police surveillance makes for white privilege and comfort, is a slippery slope that, to me, slides right into the mud of falsehood. How dare they promote the intrusion of our rights to privacy as beneficial for any class, race, or gender? Connoting that the revocation of basic American constitutional rights under the First, Third, Fourth, and Fifth Amendments as beneficial is totally ludicrous and wrong. Invading one's right to privacy is not only oppressive for some, it is oppressive to all. Privilege does not allow us to think about security as beneficial. It only perpetuates our fear. So yes, racism is alive, and yes, violence against people is abhorrent, and it is happening everywhere. And my point is to everyone, not just people of color. Whites also suffer racism. So for me to pretend that non-people of color don't have to worry about their way of life in terms of being equitable is a farce. The argument that encounters with police or that getting shorthanded or cut off at the cafe while waiting in line are all just overt acts of racism is also not true, because the same troubles and run-ins are part of my lived experience in Denver. Yes, blindness to racism makes racism sinister. This is duly noted by Ellison in The Invisible Man and by those of us who have chosen to fight against its chains of oppression. However, trends missed the mark in converting their conversation to praxis. The best suggestion for a solution was Ramon's addressing the cost of housing, because Dr. Martin Luther King's mission was to eradicate poverty at the national level for all of God's children. I'm excited for KGMU to relocate to Denver in District 3, because then maybe the panel discussions will themselves also take on more credibility in terms of diversity, inclusion, and equity when you see how the other half lives. Thank you. J.P. McGee.
Well, good afternoon. This is Michael C. saying congratulations to Christine on her first of Honky Tonk Heroes. She did an excellent job, and I hope there's more of them to come. Again, thanks so much, Christine, for a great country music program. Thanks. Now, bye.
And that is the comment line. The number to call is 303-447-9911. Leave a message and we broadcast the comment line on Tuesday mornings. Still lots more to come. We'll have science on How on Earth. That's coming up in just a couple of moments. Then at 9 o'clock, it is Alan Watts rounding out this morning's news and public affairs. Now, don't forget, ballots must be returned, dropped off by 7 p.m. this evening. It is too late to mail them. Democracy Now!'s special Super Tuesday coverage will be live streamed at kgnu.org from 5 to 10pm this evening. We'll also live stream Pacifica Radio's coverage that includes and features Sonali Kulhatkar, and we'll broadcast it on the radio Democracy Now! From 5 to 6pm this evening. Find out more at kgnu.org.